I want to repeat what the report on our forests have made clear. Water is a great asset, but uncontrolled water in large quantities can cause great floods and devastation during hurricanes. Many of the tangled mangrove swamps, which guarded the coastlines of the tropics, particularly the American tropics, were torn out for shrimp farming. No one made the connection that at the same time there was an ever-increasing damage by hurricanes. The tangle of mangrove routes both above and below the water level had slowed the onslaught of destructive ocean waves. Now the ocean was free to slosh all over in these areas formerly protected by the mangrove swamps. The excessive amounts of fertilizer, which had been applied to the land over the years, most of it unused, ran off the farmland, into rivers and down to the oceans. Now there are dead zones, where fish cannot live due to the red algae, which has bloomed at the mouths of these rivers. The high nutrient load of organic matter washing off the land and coming down the rivers has created a great environment for the algae. This algae can create a toxin, which gets into the fish to poison them? And in turn it can poison humans who eat the fish. It is a case of so much of a good thing, fertilizer, that is. It can no longer be taken for granted that water, which has been tied up in glaciers in Antarctica for millennia, will stay there. As Mother Earth has begun slowly shifting on her magnetic axis, Dolores areas are turned towards more sunlight and they begin to melt. Coast dunes and low-lying lands all over the Earth will soon be submerged beneath this rising water. So far mankind has ignored the danger and continues to try to live as close to the shore as they can. It is very beautiful there and they don't want to give up their beautiful homes. The leader at the diplomats wearing the red capillaries snorted with derision. What's the matter with these humans? They're fouling their own nest, fouling their rivers, fouling the air. Even animals know better than to foul their own nest. What are they thinking of? He shook his head. Well, many of the moneyed people, in the financial sectors of the Earth, just don't see it happening. It is taking place too far away from their front door for them to be affected by it, drawled Erdrows. The briefer sat down and another one of Erdrows' people came forward. At the same time as the ecology of nature was being tampered with, there began to be a concern about the health of humanity. In one aspect, this is good as it keeps people from unnecessarily dying of diseases at an early age. I felt a tap on my shoulder. It was Bian. Come on. Let's go to the Great Library. She led me in another direction down a narrow hallway. We approached an open-ended box made of crystal. There were three dials on the right-hand panel. She stopped briefly in front of it and turned two of the dials counterclockwise. Then she stepped into the box. She appeared to shimmer a little bit as she walked through it. When she finished walking through it, she motioned for me to come too. Curious, I slowly set foot on the crystal floor. My heart seemed to buzz a little and I had a touch of vertigo as the walls seemed to shift colors. I walked gamely on. As soon as I got through it, I regained my sense of balance. When we opened the door to the auditorium, I could see Erdrows facing us. He made a motion for both of us to come forward. Bian walked up the steps to the stage where all the delegates were and set her laptop computer in front of Erdrows. She motioned me to do the same. I set my laptop right beside hers. Erdrows nodded and gave a smile of thanks and we returned to the audience. The briefing was continuing on right where we had left off. We hadn't missed a beat. I looked at Bian questioningly. She smiled, tapped her left wrist where she might have worn a watch and made a sudden counterclockwise twisting motion with her right thumb and forefinger. Oh ho! So that open-ended crystal box we passed through back there was a time machine to turn time back a little bit. Okay. Great. So I am discovering that we are unlimited in our possibilities. There was no way that we could be late. I might not know how all of this technology works, but I can sure appreciate being able to utilize such a machine. Thought on roots of music and healing by music tones as this briefing came to an end. Erdrows called Bian and me to come up on the dais with the representatives from the different planets and galaxies. These ladies from my mothership have some information they would like to share with you at this time. The topic is a little different. It is how music has affected the lives of humanity. Behan Torsa of this ship will begin the briefing. Then Kartriya, who regularly visits us here on the mothership, will finish up. Bian stepped up to begin. The earliest musical instrument that man had was a drum, though it might simply be a stick hitting a hollow log. Soon he had an inner urge to sing along with his drumming. Men and women sang separately at first, then learned that they could sing together and blend their voices. It became a lesson in cooperative effort. From these humble beginnings, humanity began to develop instruments, such as the lyre, cymbals and other instruments that they learned to play together. It was said in some of humanity's religious books, that some call the Old Testament, that a shepherd boy called David, played the lyre and sang for King Saul. With the sweet sound of his voice and his lyre he was able to calm the raging emotions, which had beset the king. From that day forward the king kept him at his side. Civilization marches forward in many ways upon the earth. Music came to the assistance, for there were those known as troubadours who traveled over Europe. Their whole purpose was to carry the news from town to town. They sang the news, often in rhyme. Because they sang it, the people gathered round to listen, and because it was in rhyme, they remembered the information better. Of course, they also found entertainment in the music. The healing community had also discovered the magic of music. They discovered, not surprisingly, that there were healing qualities present in the human voice that were not present in other sounds. These were healing qualities when a pure tone was sung. This could heal some emotional illnesses, and produce a calm so that other problems could at least be borne with more grace. Bian got ready to close down her presentation. The only other instrument that can match the human voice for healing is the violin, because it can produce such a sweet tone. The harp runs a close third. This may be because all three, the human voice, the violin and the harp, are all stringed instruments. A ripple of laughter went through the audience. Thank you, Behan Torslea. And now Gatrier, can you tell us what you found? Said Edrose. I walked on stage, took the laptop computer and pointed it to the presentation screen. No, I can't tell you, sir, but I think I can show you what humanity has been able to create in the last 200 years or so. The strains of sprightly music by Mozart filled the auditorium as I pressed the keys for my presentation to begin on the laptop computer. Chapter 21. The meetings continue. We all assembled again in the great auditorium on many of the following nights. The briefings continued about the welfare of different aspects of the earth. Sometimes Bian and I were sent off to the great library to do additional research for Edrose. But when we returned, we would find that the subject had hanged. A delegate from the group with green capillets gave a report on the healing arts. It was a mixed report, with some high marks for the use of herbs and energy healing. However, the report also showed the stranglehold that certain kinds of medicine had on the health for its citizens. It was challenging to try to listen to the briefings and also attempt to keep up with what we understood Edrose would need. Then I heard something that made my blood run cold. The chief of the Red Delegation, who was from a star system completely outside the Milky Way, shook his head. There don't seem to be very many redeeming qualities among these humans on Earth. They consume the resources of Earth, they foul the waters of the oceans, and then they even consume themselves in war. For what purpose? They are guilty of so such destruction of the planet and even self-destruction. I think that all of humanity should be eliminated from the Earth. Then the Earth can purify itself. Then it can start over. Those of us in audience from Earth were suddenly paralyzed with fear. No. Edrose thundered at him. If you were allowed to destroy humanity, you would be just as guilty as what you are condemning humanity itself for. Yon cannot do this. The two powerful leaders stood eye to eye. Edrose continued, you have no idea what humanity has been up against on this planet. Earth is and always has been a planet of free will. Here humanity can learn quickly from the consequences of their mistakes. There is no such planet in your universe where lessons can be learned so quickly. Humanity can also learn of the value of love and kindness on Earth, as well. These are important lessons. These are hard lessons, but it is important that such lessons can be learned here on Earth. Where would you have such beginning souls go to learn these needed lessons? Then he took a deep breath. Besides that, we have some of ours down there, working on the problems of Earth. They may not know they are ours, but nonetheless they took our missions with them, when they incarnated as humans. The other delegates with their different designated colors were listening carefully to each of these leaders. At this point, the decision could go either way. Edros repeated. We've got some of ours down on planet Earth. They are some of our Pleiadian brothers and sisters. You can't destroy them. That would be worse than what you are condemning the rest of the Earth for. That kind of destruction would be on your head. That is not what we are gathered here today for. It cannot be allowed. I let go of a deep breath I had been holding for a long time. The future of Earth hung in the balance before our very eyes. Well, all right, said the leader of the Red Delegation. But something has to be done, about the overpopulation and pollution of the Earth, the seas, the air, and the anger that pollutes the energies of the Earth, as well. Very well, we can now begin to discuss the options, said Edros. Humanity seems to learn its lessons most quickly by suffering. Floods, storms, even volcanic activity, seem to make people lose their fascination with material goods. When they have lived through these disasters, they start learning to help one another. They share food and shelter, even with a stranger, when all are suffering alike. Heads in all the colors of the delegations were nodding in approval. A member of the Blue Delegation said, we must be careful that any storms that are loosed upon the planet do not completely destroy the educational system. The discussions continued about what aspects of planet Earth were to be protected and such institutions would be allowed to be broken up. The gathering of the 2,000 Earthlings watched in alternating fascination, horror and hope, as the discussions continued. All at once, Edros stopped in the middle of the discussion. He stood up and addressed all of us in the audience. Now do you understand why you have been brought up here from the Earth? You are our own, of whom I was speaking earlier. You must now return to your earthly homes and tell everyone you know about the Star People, who have been the protectors of Earth since before you were born. Some of your cultures carry legends of this truth, in particular the native peoples of many lands. Other cultures have lost it. It is now time to share the knowledge with one another. It is now time for the native peoples to tell what they know about us, the Star People, to the rest of the world. The people of Earth will learn that they are not alone, that they do not have the right to destroy your Mother Earth. They must learn to love and care for one another. Everyone here must share this knowledge. Let fear drop by the wayside. It is a small thing compared to the future that can be yours if you will learn to work together. Then the floods and storms will not be as severe. We were all in shock. We had been galvanized to go into action when we returned down to the Earth again. Despite what we had heard and seen on the mothership, when we returned home, the fear set in for many people. We would open our mouths to speak but nothing came out. The old taboos of keeping quiet were too strong for some people, even though they knew they should speak out. Many were afraid of being called crazy. Some people who attended this conference on the mothership have been braver than others and have spoken out or have created groups to help protect the Earth. The Galaxy Diplomats Conference did not last for just a few meetings. It went on for weeks. We would find ourselves up in the auditorium very often during these astral travels. The news was always very heavy. At times the Red Delegation seemed like it was gaining ground. That was a real worry for us Earthlings. Somehow that gave us the needed courage to speak out. The alternative to silence might be the annihilation of civilization upon the Earth. We learned later by watching the 3D video of what some members of the Red Delegation had decided to do on their own. They had cultured a type of bacteria that their own people had immunity to, but that humanity on Earth had little or no resistance to. There was an exploration team being organized from members of the delegations, who would be sent down to Earth to take soil samples from all 5 continents. At the last minute, a junior member of the Red Delegation was added to the team planning to visit Earth. He was very curious about this strange planet of Earth that had free will. So he was allowed to join the exploration team. Unbeknownst to him, his flight suit had been carefully splotched with the bacteria, so that when he would brush up against plants or bushes, he would leave some of this foreign bacteria there to grow in its own good time. We watched the documentary showing pictures of the exploration team as they wandered on each of the continents in search of the soil samples. The red delegate was allowed to explore as he wished. He bounced around, looking at everything with the enthusiasm of an adolescent schoolboy. He wanted to touch everything and he lunged through bushes to climb to the top of small hills. He set loose the bacteria every place he touched. When the exploration team returned to the mothership, this junior red team member was told to go to a decontamination chamber. He turned over his flight suit to be destroyed, thus disposing of any evidence of the bacteria as well. He was actually unaware of his role in this activity. However, everything had been recorded in the Akashic record. When Edros discovered what had happened by viewing the Akashic record, he was very angry. He believed that the Red Delegation had betrayed their trust. He decreed that they no longer had freedom of movement on his ship. After that, some of the Pleiadians were assigned to escort members of the Red Delegation wherever they went on his mothership. Then he sent the original team members back down to Earth. They went to the same spots on all five continents and, using a special light, which was sensitive to the bacteria, they picked it all back up again to be destroyed. If they hadn't gotten every bit of this bacteria that was foreign to the Earth, we would have had one more unknown deadly disease, which would decimate the population of Earth. I am very grateful to the Pleiadians for their watchdog mentality. It was made abundantly clear to all of us who witnessed these meetings, that it is time for all of us here on Earth to take our power back. We must protect our planet in all ways that we know how. Nobody can do it for us. Each attendee has special talents, from plant care to writing newsletters, to speaking, to meditations for the healing of planet Earth. We were informed that we didn't all have to do the same thing, but we each must call upon our own talents to help humanity and the Earth. Chapter 22 Extraterrestrial Meeting on Earth. I sat bolt upright in bed and looked at the clock. It was 6:17 a.m., Thursday, April 24, 1997. And then I remembered a dream, but a very strange one. There had been a group of us returning home. We were headed north on Highway 65. It was after a conference. One think we may have been traveling by minibus. The woman who was driving was a good friend of mine, but she was driving down the highway like a bat out of hell. I held my breath as she rounded a curve. There were great drops of water splatting on the windshield. Thunder and lightning were going on all around us. I begged her to drive a little slower. Then the rain actually hit. She had been trying to outrun the storm, but it hadn't worked. So finally she slowed down. We looked up and saw a huge light overhead. Then it split apart and three tiny lights came out of the center. The dived aids circled one another. Hey, these are just like the scout craft that I have used, I thought. At that moment one of the craft flashed a light toward us and came down to the ground in front of us. There is some missing time for me here. Now we are on the ground, stopping at a little cafe and gas station outside of a town that sounds like M.ville. We are near an electric transformer station. The door to the cafe bangs as a nice-looking fellow runs outside. He is wearing a brownish vest over a long-sleeved yellow shirt. Did you see those UFOs? We asked. Yes, they are over there, refueling on top of the transformers. He is excited. I've told them they shouldn't do this, that they need to pay for what they get. They will get caught and then there will be real trouble. Do you know them? Yes, I know they are extraterrestrials, Pleiadians, friends of mine. They come here all the time. A lot of people who live around here have seen them. I keep telling the Pleiadians to be careful about that electricity, but it does no good, they do it anyhow. He was clucking in disapproval and shaking his head. Out of curiosity we meander/wander over towards the electric power station. Sure enough there are two small scouter rafts stacked up together on top of the power station and one scout craft on the ground. Because they are saucer-shaped, those two scout craft look for all the world like they belong with the power station as part of the transformer equipment. Several crew members of the one scout craft are standing around on the ground. There is a young blonde man from our group who is from the military. He stands very straight and tall and goes up to one of the crew members. I know you, don't I? Yes, that's right, The crew member of the scout craft continues working on the craft long enough to disconnect everything. Yes, we have flown together. Do you remember? Yes, I certainly do. We've gone all over the world, skipping and diving over the earth and oceans, even over Antarctica and Africa. But I have always remembered it as a vivid dream. Now you say it's not. Who is you? What is your name? The crew member paused a moment, looks around at his friends and then says, my name? Starbright's Vibaha. I hear a chuckle and someone mutters, even the Star Trek writers could do better than that. The crew continues to collect some of their tools and get ready to return them to their scout craft. But it looks like it is so small that only one person can fit into it. One of the crew members lifts up the hatch on top, climbs over the edge and begins to descend a vertical ladder inside it. He motions us to follow. We look around at one another in disbelief. The blonde fellow, who is a Lieutenant Fiome, an army post nearby, is curious. He leans over the edge of the opening in the small saucer aircraft to look inside. In a moment he decides to climb in too. Phew. I guess they can stretch their craft like they can bend time. That's right. I heard telepathically. I go over to the woman crew member that is resting nearby. She is nice looking, with brown hair and smiles a lot. I repeat the same statement to her, I think I knows you. You look like a friend of mine named Bian. I do? Well, of course you know me. We have worked together. Remember? She flips an invisible switch I hadn't seen. A video comes on that plays some kind of a cosmic soap opera. She is the actress in it. The story is a love triangle about of a man and woman and her aircraft. You love that aircraft as much or more than you love me. He accuses her. Sometimes I think so. She says in the soap opera. There is a shot of her hugging a long fuselage. I can't help but laugh. I'm looking at a Pleiadian soap opera but nothing ever changes, I thought. This stops the video abruptly. You are Bian. I can't believe it. I am laughing at my own disbelief. You took me into the ballet in space, and helped me learn to control the movement of objects with my mind. But now you are down here in Earth space. Does that mean that you are a third dimensional being? Of course. Pinch me if you like, and she held out her arm. Gingerly I pinched her arm. Ow! She cries out in mock alarm and we burst out laughing. Say, I never took the time to ask you before, but what sort of recreation do you have up where you live, on the mothership? We have all of the arts, we have everything. She showed me a video clips on the screen of a marching band, a ballet, a colorful festival in progress with costumed participants. And I can also hear symphonic music. Suddenly realization is happening among them in two, especially the blonde lieutenant. Yes, you and I have flown together on some very unusual missions. You and I have done great things in flight, like flying through the hole in Antarctica and flying through the hollow earth and out the other end. Admiral Byrd knew about that. He hesitates, but I don't think you could explain anything about it to the humanity on Earth. Oh. I don't know about that. Maybe now they would understand more than in years gone by, said the man who called himself Starbright. Maybe she could tell the story, says another crew member, pointing to me. She can sure lay on those words. I grinned and nodded in thanks, but I held up my palms, shaking them to signify that I decline. Another one of our van's passengers asks, your technology, did you help us out in the Persian Gulf War? Yes. We helped out, but only at the request of your military. It was done simply because we were able to save casualties on both sides. We were even at Fort Meade training some of the troops. But we told them that they had to cut out those guys that are Weight Watchers, as you say. We all had a chuckle at that. The Pleiadians are all trim and slim. Do they know about you at high levels? A picture of General Schwarzkopf flashed in front of me. Yes, all of them do. And your president, Clinton, and all those high military, etc., do too. Does Hillary know about you folks? Of course she knows, but she was asked to lie about it, to lay it on thick. She does a pretty good job, don't you think? We get a big laugh out of watching what she says and does. Well, I sure couldn't do that, I said. That's why I've been so nervous whenever I write about my experiences with you. I use a pen name instead of my own name. I said, oh. You do? A crew member says in mock shock, you mean just like Stubb right here. There are chuckles all around. Quite seriously, we have three names, you know, said Bian. We have the ones we use on Earth, the ones we use when we are flying the scout craft, and another name back home on the mothership. A little bit later I asked some of the other Earthside members of the group I had been traveling with in a van. What are you going to tell everybody when you get back home? There is silence in the saucer craft. What are you going to tell them? I repeated and pointed at one girl who was sitting down. Nothing, and she shrugs and looks down. Just that I saw some UFOs, that's all. At least that's the truth, says another. I sigh, for I'm getting a little frustrated with them. You need to tell your friends something more than that. These people are going to be around to help during Earth's crisis and upheaval. All my Earthling friends look uncomfortable and uncertain. The Pleiadians are silent, just I listening. I'm back talking with the woman crew member again. Did you stop this storm for us to get here? Yes, and she giggles. How much ahead of time did you know about the storm, and about us coming back from this trip? We looked ahead about 60 days ago, so we planned for it to take place now. And to my unasked question, why me? This visit was set up for you, all for the lieutenant to remember something that takes place on Earth as well. It was so you would have more confidence in your memories. Apparently he was a military crew member of an air evacuation flight. I got real quiet, thinking very hard about the implications of all of this. There will be more contacts like this for people to remember, Bian assured me. I looked around and there are five or six Earthlings in deep conversation with the off-Earth people. Bian waves her hand at them. They are all our contacts. She grinned. That's why you all were inspired to go to your conference together. Why do I remember everything now? The veil has been pulled back so that you could remember. Did this experience take place right now, or is it a replay of what went on before? It is a replay. Now everyone is inside the craft. I'm at a table looking at a scrapbook of one of the crew members. He has pictures or drawings of the jewelry of famous people on Earth, around the Middle Ages. I'm looking for the picture of Gottes, he says. I don't like him very much, he was awfully cruel. I wrinkled up my nose. I know, he said. Oh, here it is, and the picture of Gottes just droops with gold chains and some gems. He actually looks top-heavy, a little gross. No one else on the crew is interested in my collection. They think that it is kid stuff to collect pictures of Earthlings. I found it interesting that a crew member collects things of Earth. That's something quite different, to be sure. Can I write up this experience of what has been happening right now? I asked. Of course you can. That's what you are supposed to do, you know. Okay, I said excitedly. At that moment my eyes came open and I see the clock saying 6:17 a.m. I write two pages of notes in the dark that I can't even see. Then I go to the computer to transcribe this. I received a mental so long as I finished typing it all into the computer. It is now 7:45. As I am sitting here, I asked, how is it that I can remember more at this time than I have in the past? Just ask to remember. And also don't forget to use your crystal on the silver triangle when you go to bed. It was a little hard to get through to you right after your operation. Maybe the leftover anesthetic got in the way. The communication system seems to be working even during my waking hours, but only the hearing, the clairaudience. I can no longer see them, but I can hear. Just now I heard, great. It is much more in the book itself, which I think can still be got hold of. And extract.